The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Welcome back to another episode of
Tinfoil Hat.
Tinfoil Hat. Come with me into the waters of conspiracy with Sam Tripoli.
Sam Tripoli.
Sam Tripoli.
With my friend Ryan Davis.
Hi, Ryan.
We're like the first gay couple of conspiracy theories.
I think it's beautiful, man.
Hello there, partner.
Say that again.
Dark realm, crazy shit.
Wake up, Aaron. The reptile people are everywhere.
Hey, man, where's the truth there, dog?
Oh, what the fuck are you guys even talking about?
Are you ready to get your mind blown?
Revolution will be podcasted.
And yes, and welcome to a very special, fun episode of Tinfoil Hat. Welcome back to the bunker. Joining me, as always, is one of my favorite people on the planet, my partner in crime. I'm Batman. He is Aquaman. Are you Aquaman? Are you cool with that? Or you want to be Wolverine?
Either way.
Ryan Davis, everybody. The most off-the-grid motherfucker you'll ever meet in your life.
I'm here. Let's get weird.
Yeah, let's get weird. As always, guys, thank you to everybody who loved the last couple episodes. Thank you, everybody who loved them. Thank you, everybody who hated them. We went a little hard on the Satanism, but you know what? Everything just kind of morphs into something, right?
Don't be afraid.
Real quick, we want to give shout-outs to our good friends, our sponsor of the show. Go to speedweed.com if you're in Los Angeles and you are looking for some bud. Go to our Gino and our good friends over there at Speedweed. They are the best of the best, and they're only getting better. For all your medicinal marijuana needs, get medical, homeboy. And then, also, our good friends at Dream Donut Truck. That's right, Dream Donut Truck. They have a wonderful food truck that goes around Los Angeles. They came to our big show last Tuesday in the main room. And, man, they brought the most amazing donuts. We gave donuts to all the crowds. I'm going to somehow get Speedweed and the donut Dream Donut Truck to come together do some weed donuts. You know what I'm saying? That's what we're talking about, homeboy. Where is this thing? So, guys, why is this? Guys, we have a new Instagram, too. You guys go to Tinfoil Hat Pod. We already have 395 followers. Bam!
That's right. Calling all artists, Photoshoppers, meme makers. Send us your inspired TFH inspired type of art, man. We wanted to get weird, use our image. And yeah, show us what you got.
Dude, light us up, man. Light us up. Do the weirdest, the funniest, the coolest memes, Photoshops you can. Be part of the show. Without you guys, the show means nothing. We're also on Reddit, man. Go. That's right. Go to Tinfoil Hat Show. And everybody's talking about all the stuff that's going on. Be a part of it. Comment. I get in it. I'll talk to you. You talk to me, I'll talk to you. Go to Reddit, get on Tinfoil Hat Show.
If there's any guests you guys want, go ahead and email us at tinfoilhatpod@gmail.com, and we'll go ahead and check that out, man.
Guys, and now a little dates out of the gates. I am going to be at the Death Squad show this Wednesday night at the Comedy Store. Joe Rogan, Nick Swartzen, the list goes on and on. Brian Redban, who else? Dean Del Rey, and everybody who came out to Toronto for the shows. Thank you for being Tinfoil Hat fans. Thank you for being Mad Hatters. The fact you guys even, the fact that I was walking down the street and someone yells Tinfoil Hat to me, it still blows my mind, the power of the internet.
There you go.
Right? It's so nuts. Thank you for all the support.
I can only imagine what they'd yell at me.
Aaron, they love you. Probably. I think everybody's in on it, Aaron. Everybody knows you're great. Guys, I will be at the Philly Punchline August 24th through the 26th. That is during the big Conor McGregor-Floyd Mayweather fight. They're actually going to go to the show, and then they're going to show the fight in the comedy club after my Saturday show. So come hang out with me and let's watch chaos ensue.
Yeah, over under on a race riot in Philly.
Hey, dude, I'm all down. Yeah, that's great. Well, I don't know, man. That was the great thing about Bill Burr when they didn't have a picture. No, was that Philadelphia?
Yeah, I think so. Philly.
Where they didn't have Smoking Joe Frazier up there, but they had something of Rocky, who was a fake guy. That was great, dude. I love Philadelphia. I'm excited to be back. Come out. You guys can get your tickets at, where is it? Punchline. PhillyPunchline.com/SamTripoli. Go get your tickets now. And then Comedy Chaos is back August 29th. We've done 5 sold-out shows at the main room of the Comedy Store. That's 400 seats, 5 in a row, sold out. Bam!
Doing it.
We're doing good. That laugh is a man who's got shit going on. Who's our guest?
Today's guest is a documentary filmmaker known for I Am Comic, second film, I Am Road Comic, and today, talking about the one and only Jordan Brady.
Jordan, welcome to the show. Real quick.
Thanks for having me.
Thanks for coming on. You got a new movie coming out we're super excited about, I Am Battle Comic. Let's hear a little bit of the trailer right here. Enjoy.
I don't think you're going to be receiving any direct fire on the plane. Okay. And if you do, you're going to need a lot more than a vest if you're on a plane when it happens.
I've been here in July when it's stupid hot. I don't have to tell you guys. Yeah, last time I was here, I actually saw a camel go, son of a bitch. Which is weird. In this part of the world, you wouldn't think the camels would even speak English.
Great joke.
I've done
great
6 joke. USO tours.
I did it 3 times in 1 year.
George,
can you believe that?
How many countries have you been to?
39 or 40 right now.
You never know if the guy you're performing for, shaking your hand, snapping the picture with, that's your Facebook buddy today, is going to be there tomorrow. That's Afghanistan and Iraq are real.
They're going to let us fire a Patriot missile or two each. Is it? No?
Navy seems to be a go-to punchline when it's not the Navy. Or if it is the Navy, then the Air Force is a good punchline.
It's good, playful, fun between the branches.
Who do you make fun of?
Oh, everybody except for the Marines.
And is the Coast Guard part of the military, or is that like a club? It's a club, right? I mean, it's not really. What do they do? There's a pamphlet, you sign it, you color a turtle, you're in. I mean, it can't really be that hard to be in the Coast Guard.
Yeah, that is the trailer. You can see the trailer on YouTube. Just put an I Am Battle Comic official trailer. Again, please welcome Jordan Brady to the show.
Thanks
How
for
are
having
you,
me.
My friend?
I'm great. First of all, let's get this out of the way. I Am Battle Comic. Terrible name.
No.
Oh, it's a horrible name. It's
I love
confusing.
It. Why?
People think of the roast battle and they don't know what it is.
No, dude, you're in the battlefield, man. I personally like it. So
thank you.
I'm
okay,
cool
good,
to
good.
Let's all put up positive vibes here, man.
Yeah, positive.
You're probably overanalyzing
it. I was
half
kidding, by the way.
And you're trying to overanalyze. Let's fucking enjoy it. So, dude, tell me about the movie.
Okay, so I Am Comic. I Am Road Comic. People have seen them. Comics love them. I got asked to go entertain the troops in Afghanistan, Iraq, Kuwait. I said yes. And the only catch was I had to perform for like 15 minutes.
Did you ever perform before this?
Yeah, I was a comedian back in the first comedy boom of the 80s. I did it for many, many years. But I hadn't done it in over 20 years, except for one of the I Am Road Comic I did. Stand-up. So I put a shitty act together. I did some crowd work. You know, if you're on a base in Afghanistan and you go, hey, anybody from out of town?
Yeah.
It actually gets a laugh.
Yeah. Never heard that. Duly noted. Yeah. Duly noted.
But the main purpose was to document the comics that were on this tour. Great guys. When Bob Kubota I had known for 30 years, Don Barnhart I had known for a long time,
right.
Jeff Capri I had met, and Slade Ham, the guy by the tree there, I had not met. We're like brothers now. I mean, you go on tour with someone like that, with a group of guys or women, you really bond.
I've done 3 or 4 of
military
tours. I love doing it. I've always felt guilty and not about not joining the military.
Relieves you of that guilt.
It makes me feel like I took, you know, because since I was a kid, I wanted to be a stand-up comic. From the moment I realized I existed in the universe, at one moment where you self-realize and you're like, oh, I'm something in this world, I've always wanted to be a comic. But there's always some point, you know, you got your grandfather fought in World War II and all this stuff, and you feel like this is rite passage, and, you know, you didn't do it, probably because I'm a pussy, you know. So when I get asked to do it, I always say yes. I always do it. After doing this show, I don't know how much they'll let me do it after that, but I've always really enjoyed it. One of my best experiences ever was going with Steve Byrne, Dove Davidoff, and Brian Callen. And we did everything. Man.
Brian's done a lot of them, hasn't he?
He's the most entertaining dude I've ever met in my life. So we would show up, we go on these long flights, and it was very funny because you start from a modern airplane, and as you go farther and deeper into the Middle East, your airplanes get older and older till I felt like we were taking like 70s porno fucking scene. I mean, like the furniture looked like right out of a porno from the 70s, you know? And you land, and we're all jet lagged. And Steve, Dove, and I, we're all just jet lagged. But who is on is Brian Callen is fucking on, dude. And everywhere we go, he starts putting on a show. And I'm like, and we're all like, thank God, because we are jet lagged. And, you know, the whole purpose to be there is to meet and greet everybody and show your appreciation for what they're doing. So we're doing a show, and, man, I've never seen this before. I mean, I've seen it with someone like Bill Burr or Joe Rogan where they have this huge following. But, you know, I introduced Brian Callen. He walks up to a standing O. That's how well he put on a show. And
let's point out to the listener that the troops revolve around the base. It's not like it's the same people that are stationed on the same base a year later when Brian goes back.
Right.
It's that his reputation has preceded him.
Yes, 100%. Yeah. So, and it's so interesting because each country you go to has its own kind of rules to it. Like in Kazakhstan, you can drink, but they can't fool around. But in like Afghanistan, they can't drink, but they could totally hook up, you know, with the, you know, the guys and the girls on base. Because you walk around some of the bases on in Afghanistan, and you literally think you're at Arizona State University,
right.
But people have guns around them, which is my new fetish I got from their hot chicks with guns. But it's such an appreciation, and I've learned, and maybe you could talk about this a little bit, the more dangerous the base is, the more they appreciate the comedy.
The further away from the United States of America that you get, yes, the more they need relief, because it's a 24/7 job, and every day is like a Monday. You're just on patrol, and there's long stretches of boredom where nothing's happening, and then the shit hits, and you got to be ready. So the fact that we're coming over there, and like Don Barnhart was similar to Brian, that we'd walk in a room at 10 in the morning, he'd start shaking people, saying, hey, where are you from? We're the comedians. Start doing a show. And that was all new to me. I thought, hey, you shake a few hands, you do a show at night. No, it's like from 9 or 10 in the morning until 6, you're going from unit to unit talking to the men and women that serve.
Yes. And it's, you know, it's like we would play frisbee football, whatever they need. I would wake up early, try to do the best I can to, you know, to show them appreciations. We went to some interesting, really cool bases. Like one was called Camp Phoenix. And what I didn't realize until I got there is it was everybody from my home area. It was basically this camp was full of everybody from upstate New York. So it was the Syracuse, Cortland, where I'm from, Binghamton area, and to the point where my brother went to the funeral of one of the people that had been stationed there.
He way to bring passed. It down, Sam.
Yeah, I'm sorry about that, but it was a small world. So
yeah.
And I'm still friends with the guys I met at that base like 8 years ago. I'm in their fantasy football league.
That's exactly the point of the movie that I used to think. I'm a pretty liberal guy, right? Hate the war.
Well, we'll get into that, too. I want to talk to you about that.
Hate that, you know, protested when my kids were little, when the first, you know, Bush went over, right? Is that the first one?
Yeah.
The first Gulf War. And so I was wondering, like, how am I going to deal with this? But now I don't see the troops as a big green blob.
Yeah.
I see them as individual men and women that fucking volunteered to do it. So
yes.
You can hate the war, but they're over there now.
You can hate the foreign policy, but you can appreciate and show support of those who've put themselves in a position.
And they didn't vote for the war.
Yeah.
I mean, maybe some of them did.
Yeah.
But they didn't have that power. None of them do.
And as time goes on, we start realizing more and more that there's other stuff going on. And we've discussed this on this podcast, too, deep state stuff and all that. But that doesn't change the fact that most of those people joined for because they love their country and for a better life. So, you know, in that, I really expect and I really love that. One of the funnest bases I ever did was a base called Camp Alamo, which was because it was surrounded by all the locals. That's why they call it the Alamo.
What country is that in?
In Afghanistan. And we went there and we were doing stand-up. And halfway through, it was very interesting because, you know, it's weird because the military is very formal in one sense. That, you know, it's like there's very strict rules, which I get. You got to have people following the rules.
Don't make fun of the president. Are you talking about for the troops or for the comedians?
In sense of the environment that you're going into.
Yeah.
Into, you know, there's a very structured because, you know, they have a mission and they have to have people, you know, and there's no room for, you know, kind of spitballing it. You know, everyone's got a job and everyone does that. But after I started realizing that these people, these are kids, that these are kids like me and my friends growing up, and we bust each other's balls, and kind of how you talk about if you make fun of the Navy, if you're doing them, you know, the Marines, and how they like, you know, I started busting these guys' balls, and
I love it.
Kind of stopped doing my act and kind of just started roasting everybody.
Well, the best part for me was like back in the day when I did stand up, I did a lot of colleges. So I'd go to a campus, you pick up, I mean, this is kind of hack, right? But you pick up that college newspaper. You read a couple of things, you reference it, and they go wild. Like, he knows our school.
Yeah.
It's similar. Like, there was this Dunkin' Donuts that was like a photo mat.
Can you not talk about Dunkin' Donuts? We have Dream Donuts as a sponsor.
And,
only kid.
And I said, you know what? We need to get them some Dream Donuts over here.
Yeah.
Right? they had this this place, and it was, and I just that night said, you know, I got to go to the saddest Dunkin' Donuts on the planet. And the place erupted.
Yeah.
Like, he went over there today. Yeah. Like, what else did we do today?
Yeah. You remember the Simpsons? They had that. I was on Route 455. Oh, my God. I've been on that street. Everybody goes crazy, right?
But what you did when you recognized that you're from that same area, you know, that happened to me with these Marines. It turns out one of the guys was from the town that we filmed I Am Road Comic is. So in a way, it was like a little Easter egg
for the audience who
have seen all, like, this is the trilogy, right?
Yeah.
I Am Battle Comics, kind of the Return of the Jedi of the I Am Comics series.
Right.
So I implore the comedian fan, the comedy fan, to get all three. Maybe there'll be a box set someday.
Yeah, someday. But where can they get the movie, by the way?
Well, sure, I'll tell you that. Anywhere you consume your digital downloads. iTunes is a go-to. And before I forget, I do want to say that if you go to iambattlecomic.com, it takes you to where you can buy it, Amazon, Hulu, whatever you want to watch it on. But there's one link that says National Military Family Association. And if you want, you click on that link, and just about half the money will go to that charity.
That's great,
right?
Man. Now, is it in the movie industry, as a director, is it a golden era of movies in terms of the ability for you in comedy? You know, I live and die off my internet presence, and I love it. Like, I love that I can put out content. I don't need television. I don't need this and that. I can do it all myself. Is that the same thing with movies right now? And being a director, is the internet, like, just create this golden age of directing where you can create your own projects if you get the funding and you can put them out yourself?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I Am Comic came out in 2010. And we sold it to Showtime, then it went to Netflix and iTunes, and we eventually got a distributor. And then I Am Road Comic, which is still available for $5 at iamroadcomic.com.
Yes.
I just put it out myself and said, fuck it.
Yeah.
And then I happened to get a deal with New Wave, who does a lot of comedy specials,
yes,
comedy dynamics.
Yeah.
And they got it on Netflix for a couple years and iTunes.
Great.
And all these other places. Hulu was the money, if we're going to break it down.
Yeah.
Hulu was great. So I actually—
Is it not still?
I don't know yet. I'll find out August 8th when I Am Battle Comic comes out.
Perfect.
Yes. Because you can say, fuck you, put your film out. You know, everyone, God bless Louis C.K., like, as a businessman making that $5 model, you know, part of me says, really, $5? You couldn't have gone in at 10 or 15? Some of us need the extra $7,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, I get it.
But still, that sort of talking directly to your fans, I bow down that he built that for us, because it's not just for comedians, it's for filmmakers, right? And then I had I Am Battle Comic up for a while at iambattlecomic.com. I was going to release it a month or so ago, but I hooked up with my old distributor And they helped me with this charity angle. I went to seven cities. When will this be out? Right now?
Dude, it's, as soon as we get done, I go home, I upload it home.
Tomorrow night in San Antonio, we're screening at the Alamo Draft House.
Oh, awesome.
All that Slade Ham will be there doing the Q&A. That'll be our eighth city that we did. All the money to charity.
Oh, that's great, man.
So we paid for the theaters. My production company, we went to Detroit. We went to Dallas, Houston, Minneapolis. We just would go for a night, Q&A, give it to charity. And the distributor they said, we recognize your goal. I wanted to raise $50,000 for charity. I'm at $25,000 right now.
Oh, great.
$25. It's not very... No, $25,000 for charity. So, you know, if you click on that link, you're helping out the cause.
Well, help
out. If you
click
on other links, you're just helping out.
I am battlecomic.com.
I got one question. Am I going to cry? Because documentaries almost always make me cry. And...
7 minutes in, yes.
Oh, shit. Okay.
Seven minutes in, you're going to cry. And at the end, I've had vets come up like... Vietnam vets come up and say thank you because they didn't get the welcome home that we now as civilians give people.
Yeah.
I've had officers in the crowd stand up and go, instead of asking a question at the Q&A, they turn to the crowd and go, that's what it's like over there.
Hell yeah.
That's so great, dude. Tear up.
But then there's jokes. It's funny.
That's fucking great, man. That's fucking great.
Pretty funny.
That's I'm glad. Awesome.
When Sam said we were having a documentary filmmaker on, I was like, oh, I know what we can talk about.
Yeah, and for so, sure.
We're about to get into it.
Yeah, let's get into this.
That's right. So today's topic is going to be something that you might have seen if you've gone down the YouTube well and watched endless videos of conspiracies. Eventually, this is going to pop up on you. But what we're talking about today is the concept of pareidolia.
Pareidolia. I'm trying to find it.
Pareidolia.
Pareidolia. Have you heard of this? Have you heard of this?
No, pareidolia.
It's a psychological phenomenon in which the mind responds to an image or sounds by perceiving familiar pattern where none exists. It's like when you look in clouds and you see like, oh, there's an alligator and there's like my stepmom. So when people watch films, they see things in the background. They see certain things that just they see underlining themes and they begin to like perceive and analyze it to the point
like
where...
Like Jesus in the toast.
Yeah, or look at this, like in the moon, right? They start seeing like on the moon or on Mars, oh, there's a face. It's got to mean aliens and stuff like that. There's a lot of that in the conspiracy theory world, and especially when it comes to conspiracies in movies where you start almost wanting to find something instead of seeing it and it's in what is actually going on.
Totally.
We wanted to have you on. We've been wanting to do a movie about conspiracies and movies and stuff like that. And I think one of the I don't know where he falls on your Mount Rushmore or list of your favorite directors, but Stanley Kubrick is one of my favorites.
Oh, one of the best.
One of the best ever. One do it best. Like such a intellectual guy, almost to the point of like seems almost tortured in a weird way. He was so smart, and it's like. I'm almost happy I'm not that smart.
You know, it'd be a burden, wouldn't it?
It would just be like to be able to overanalyze every moment of everything. And, you know, I know Aaron, who is our resident skeptic of everything, says he's not a big Stanley Kubrick fan.
No.
Thoughts, Aaron?
You know, I don't, as a guy who went to film school, I don't feel it's right to torture actors, particularly Shelley Long in The Shining. And I've just never really... I don't really connect with his movies on an emotional level the way.
Like, what movies do you connect with? Like which one? The Despicable. Despicable Me.
I just saw Lion, but you know that made me cry.
That's a good one.
That's a good one. That's a good one. Do you have any? Do you have Jordan any favorite Stanley Kubrick movie?
You know, 2001 to this day.
Oh man.
We still talk about. I watch it with my grown children. I still don't understand the baby. The fact that it sparks conversation, I really admire that.
Oh, yeah. That's I used to watch that on acid a lot.
Yeah.
And you don't even need to be on acid for the last part of that film because it's like a free trip. And the way that everything is just constantly in high, like just in focus, you can pick parts of that film out nonstop.
And The Shining, we were just talking about it today because they shot, I think they did the exteriors at Mount Hood.
I'm in Oregon.
Up in Washington, Oregon, yeah.
Yeah.
But then the rest on a soundstage. And that Shelley Long behind the scenes of him tormenting her. I say, whatever it takes to get the performance. Like, it's like Michael Jackson. If he has to sleep with children,
yeah,
to give the world those songs,
yeah,
it's worth it.
Well, great art comes great war crimes. So, you know, it's so it. Be it. So fucking be it. One of the most... analyzed movies, in particular with when it comes to conspiracies, is The Shining. And I love The Shining. I loved it from the start when it's like, man, this guy is twisted. There's so much crazy shit that's involved with it. A lot of people think that the Shining was, in fact, basically about the Native American genocide.
Yeah. And talk about how the hotel is built upon the Indian burial ground.
Oh, really?
Yeah, and there's imagery throughout it. They have he was very detail oriented, and so he like painstakingly went through and had Indian type of references. And one of the key ones is calumet, and that's a baking powder. And that's what's in the storage room when they're getting like the show around.
But it's also a very popular bake. I mean, if I'm playing devil's advocate, it's
you can play.
It was that or Arm & Hammer. There are no other brands.
Well, the interesting thing is calumet means peace pipe. And so this is like a reference to the broken promise of peace that the European nations.
And here we go. We're putting pieces together. Are we overanalyzing this? I don't know.
We're not the first one to do this.
But there's so much stuff within The Shining that is a reference to Native Americans.
Totally.
Yeah.
And well, there's a foundation for this for Kubrick. He read a book called Subliminal Subduction. And that whole
I've read that book.
Have you?
Yeah. Because in advertising, there's a lot of subliminal things, especially you can Photoshop, even pre-Photoshop, that you would layer in old school.
So yeah, he applied these type of like concepts as opposed to using sexual or like over-ending themes. He used the idea of stuff in the background because he was all about focus. He was all about field of depth. Being a filmmaker, mm-hmm. You know what that's like. So he used that and spun it for The Shining. And
have you seen the movie Room 237?
No, I have not seen that.
It's very interesting. A lot of this information we're getting is from the movie that's on Netflix as we speak. And there is a lot of what's the word called?
Pareidolia.
Pareidolia. There is some stuff involved with that. Like there's one scene which they talk about how he put his face in the clouds. And like
I didn't see. I was like waiting.
Nobody saw. Everyone's like, and I think that movie is really good about showing that there's some very interesting stuff, but there's some crazy people out there that are overanalyzing like every aspect of this movie, you know.
Definitely.
But there are, you know, there's a lot of Native American imagery within this movie. Native Americans on the wall, Native Americans in pictures. Again, the baking soda that you said could be one of everything. It's like individually by itself, it might not mean anything, but when you put all these little pieces together, maybe something's there.
Right.
Maybe we're just overanalyzing.
So it's built on an Indian burial ground, and that infamous elevator scene where the blood just comes out. Well, the concept is the elevator shaft would actually be into the burial ground itself. So it's like a metaphorical blood of the Indians.
And it never opens, which is a very interesting thing. The blood comes out from a closed elevator shaft.
This definitely made me take a second look at The Shining. But, I mean, moving beyond that, it's at a basis of historical atrocities that humans have done. Not just the genocide of the Native Americans, but this has a reference in ways towards the Holocaust.
Well, there's a real quick before we move on from the Native American thing is the axe itself is a symbolism of Native Americans when he's like pounding through the door that's kind of like, you know, the fucking.
The tomahawk.
Yeah, 100%. It's so interesting. Like all this like tiny little where everything within the scenes are interesting. And then it's like, you know, there's a scene where there's a chair behind a guy and then you come back and the chair is gone.
Yeah, and his attention to detail wouldn't allow continuity error like that to happen.
But, right? And it's almost a symbolism of the breaking of the deal with the Native Americans. Like, we had a deal, and then the deal was gone.
What about the woman in the shower? Like, doesn't Jack's character see her as beautiful and young, and then they're kind of making out, and she's
turns into
dead?
A dead body. Yeah.
What's that? That's just weird for weird sake, or
well, they did talk about that. About the sexualization of ghosts? There was something about sexualization and imagery and all that stuff.
It's the way we, like, we make love to the dead, you know, the way we, like, look back at the past and we try to, like, sexualize it and fantasize it to be something bigger than it was or juicier than it was.
It's just, you know, weird stuff about how there's, like, there's no past. It only exists in our brains. That there's no real
past. Well, that I believe.
You know, that we only hold on to certain things based on what our, you know, our own thoughts and our cognitive abilities.
Totally.
It's so interesting, dude. And then there's a lot, you know, he's very affected by the Holocaust, as you were talking earlier. A lot of imagery and numbers involving the Holocaust in a lot of his movies, not just The Shining, but in a lot of his movies.
Yeah, the typewriter that he uses in this film is an Alder, and that's a German typewriter. I mean, he would do attention to detail right down to that. And Alder means eagle. And there's eagle on his shirt, there's eagle statues. This is a reference to the war eagle of Germany, but also similarities to the eagle of American culture. And so in the freezer, there's like this image. I mean, this is definitely people reading into it, but it is what it is. There's all these like meat that's just stacked onto shelves. And there's this famous photo of the Holocaust of people just, the full-on victims just stacked
dead
up on
dead bodies
the shelf.
Stacked up, yeah.
Yeah, it's like underlined. It's unconscious.
It's crazy.
Injury.
Well, like in that book that you brought up, I think it's in that book. There was a very famous, like, I think it's the Denny's clam, fried clam dinner special that people have said is an orgy with like a farm animal and just naked people all
people
piled
getting
up.
Weird.
But it's the clam platter. And it's that kind of, so is it really, like, someone took the time to put that in there? Or the camel cigarettes? You know that one, right?
Yeah.
Like, it's a naked with man erection. With a boner standing arms akimbo, and that's, he's facing backwards, and that's part of the camel. And then you have to jump off the cliff and go, well, yeah, if there's a man with a boner, that's going to make me smoke.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's like, if you think about it, like, let's say you're a Denny's guy, right? You're the Denny's photographer. Like, you didn't go to college to be the Denny's photographer.
Well, yeah,
you're like, fuck, man, I gotta pay some bills. I gotta make shit work. You know, I'm gonna put a farm orgy in this fucking this fucking oatmeal or whatever you said it was, man. You know,
fried clams.
Fried I'm gonna show people boning farm animals, and that's like how I'm gonna get back at the fact that I'm a Denny's photographer. Not that there's anything wrong with that. But, you know, it's like sometimes we see that a lot in, like, Disney cartoons and all this animation, these major movies where, like, there's this whole, like, counterculture movement where there's all these phallic symbols and stuff like that. Because
There was one in The Lion King. I just saw this. I mean, that's probably animators having a little fun. That's just good, naughty behavior.
Yeah, but then why wouldn't that apply to the guy doing Denny's pictures? Like, why wouldn't you want to, like, just rage against the machine?
Well, I think, Sam, with all respect, as a guest on the show, there's a difference between an animator with a pen and ink drawing some subliminal message versus a guy
dicks
taking
and camels.
Fried clams and moving them around
You don't
on the
know,
plate.
Dude. To that guy, that is his animation.
Yeah. And he
that
reads some people.
Picasso.
We're talking about it.
Yeah. He's like, dude, I got this job at Denny's. I fucking, fuck it. I'm a House of Pancakes guy. I'm going to fucking put dudes boning animals in the fucking oatmeal.
By the way, I have another, it's not a conspiracy, but I was preparing for the show.
Okay.
You know, as a filmmaker,
I
do a lot of commercials. That's my bread and butter. I'm a commercial filmmaker, and I've done commercials for Popeye's Chicken.
Yes.
And so I thought this was loosely related to the show. So if you go into a lot of places, especially in the South, there's a Popeye's Chicken on the corner. And you know what's usually across the street? Church's Fried Chicken. Have you heard of that? It's more of a
Southern thing. Yeah.
Church's Fried. And people live and die like, no, we're Popeye's people.
Yeah.
Fuck you. We're Church's. I'm never going to Popeye. I'm going to Church's.
Yeah. Yeah.
They're owned by the same company.
Really?
Holy shit.
Same corporate. They don't care. They sit back and go, y'all fight over the chicken. They'll do price wars, right? Like, put some pieces and prices on the sign and get everybody all upset. Then we'll match it across the street in a week. They're getting paid either way.
Right? Subliminal.
So, I don't know if that's subliminal.
Well, it's something.
Conspiracy.
Psychological.
Psychological, yeah.
Warfare. On chicken people.
On chicken lovers.
Right?
It's the
so
undertone.
Back to the, speaking of warfare, summer of 42 is the, there's a scene in which
Danny, the son, he's watching a film
with his mom.
What's weird is they're watching this TV, and it's in the center of a room, and the TV has no cord. And they're watching this film called The Summer of 42. And what's interesting about 42 is 1942 was the year that the Germans had the final solution for the extermination of the Jews.
Oh, man.
So that's where this brings us into, like, some weird... And, I mean, he wouldn't just choose anything. Like, why did he choose that? The title alone. Like, no one was going to picture... There's no real theme in that film that has anything to do with The Shining, Isolation... Yeah. So it's one of these things that when people read into it, I'm like, oh, all right.
There is something to it.
Because I really don't like The Shining. Like, I watched it, and I was bored, out of my mind the first time I saw it. And now rewatching it through the eyes of, like, weirdos that overanalyze
it. Hey, there are listeners.
Like, hey, you guys are weirdos.
No, one of the first... You
know. Lovable lunatics, man.
One of the first Steadicam usages. Usages?
I do like the... Like,
sounds good to me.
Yeah, the cinematography is cool. Yeah. The feeling of, like...
Yeah, he basically invented the Steadicam on that film.
For that film.
Yeah.
And later used on Rocky to go up the stairs.
Ah.
Not so possible.
What's that?
Rocky was out in 76. Shining's 1980. Sorry.
Ah.
Oh, snap.
So there we go.
Ha.
Yeah.
Look who strikes back.
When was this movie, The Summer of 42, out? If it's out in 79 when he's shooting the movie, maybe that's why it's there. I mean, you know.
Well, why would he put it there? I mean, it's the number 42.
So 42, this
he has a production designer, too. I mean,
hold on, dog. There's a lot to 42, bud. Okay?
So 42.
Jackie Robinson, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
The room that the whole Shining takes place, Kubrick changed this famous room in the film. It used to be room 217.
Right.
Which is interesting because Stephen King is all about details, too.
Oh, yeah, there was a lot about that.
And I've been a big King fan. I've read almost all his books. I read The Shining. I liked the book. I didn't like the movie as much.
Neither did he.
But
he hated it.
And so that's why
Stephen
he was
King
like,
hated it.
Stephen King hated it because he didn't do the details.
You read King, Aaron?
Yeah, I haven't read The Shining.
Okay, so the number 19 is key in Stephen King's books because of The Gunslinger nowadays, what's about to come out, The Dark Tower. It's all about the number 19. So 2 plus 17 is 19. And so he's like, you're taken away because The Shining has something to do with the Dark Tower. So he's like, nah, mine's going to be 237.
Okay.
2 times 3 times 7 is 42.
Mind significantly blown.
Yes. Now.
In 1969, the measured distance of the moon was 237,000 miles.
That ties in a little better for me.
Yeah. It's now been properly measured to 238.
Fuck lasers.
Yeah, but this is what they knew.
No, but see, it's like just the other day, what's the restaurant? Outback Restaurants. Have you seen that?
Oh, yeah, dude.
If you plot them on a map, you can make a pentagram.
Oh, we were talking about that the other day.
And it's like, okay, well, you could also draw Bonnie with a heart on.
Pareidolia.
Pareidolia.
Pareidolia, dude. You're fucking trying to find patterns where they may not be. Resident skeptic, you've been trying to jump in. I can see you want to say something.
Oh, yeah. I mean, Jordan, you know this from your work as well. I mean, and I know this from the countless things I've done, that mistakes happen. And, you know, continuity errors happen no matter what.
Yeah,
they
but
simply
dude.
Forgot to plug the television.
If you're
in.
Busy tormenting Shelley Long, like maybe you don't see that. I don't know.
I don't know. He just seems like everything. He was like all about environment, all about messages. That everything. He just seemed like someone who's consumed with detail.
And I would like to see people who talk this much about this movie. Analyze.
You want to know how many cats they own or some shit like that?
No, no.
47.
Well, yeah. That, yeah.
But what about the baby? 42. What about the baby at the end of Space Oddity?
What about the baby?
The big baby floating around. I don't want to spoil it for anybody listening that hasn't seen it.
No, it's fine. Let's talk
like a rebirth.
The fucking baby.
It's a rebirth.
That 2001 Space Odyssey is interesting because, I mean, that came out May 12th, 1968. July 20th, 19...
You two weren't born.
No, definitely.
You weren't even thought of.
No.
I was in some balls somewhere, maybe.
Two.
Some stale balls. But The Shining was a secret way of letting the world know something, and that is the Apollo landing, Apollo 11, was the first space flight that landed humans on the moon July 20th, 1969. Theorists, not such me, but they think that 2001 was a research in a way to fake the moon landing. And this is like...
It was like practice run.
Definitely.
That's what they think. Now, there's some crazy-ass shit.
What ties all that together is front screen projection. And that was a pretty new turn. Yeah. It was pretty new. And he mastered it in 2001. And
front screen or rear screen?
I think it's front screen.
Okay.
Yeah. And that's where people find a lot of similarities with the actual moon landing photos and video, because it has something just a little too on.
So
too weird.
So this is the kid in the movie.
Oh, look at that.
Right?
Yeah, this is Danny.
This is Danny in the movie has his sweater on in a particular scene. And the sweater is the Apollo. And he's right outside, Apollo 11, right outside of room 237, which we know is reference to what we believe is the moon.
I mean, this movie came out in 1980. That means it was shot like 79, maybe early 70s.
Maybe early.
Why is he wearing a sweater from the Apollo 11, 1969? Like, who wears commemorative handmade sweaters?
He's a child in the 70s, I mean, if I may.
It's definitely weird. And here's the way that they think this
Did Stanley Kubrick bang your mom? Why you hate him so much?
I don't.
Why you hate him so much?
But yeah, there's so many better movies out there. Definitely. I have a problem with him and Scorsese. So.
Really?
Yeah, I do.
Oh, wow. Dude, you are pissing people off.
Well, they say that Kubrick found a way to speak through his character, Jack Nicholson. And in this quote, it was like a way of him saying directly to his wife or to whoever knew of the moon landing hoax that he may or may not have been involved with. And the quote is straight up from Jack. The owners have placed their complete confidence and trust in me, and that I have signed a letter of agreement, a contract in which I've accepted that responsibility. Do you have the slightest idea what a moral and ethical principle is? Has it ever occurred to you what would happen to my future if I was to fail to live up to my responsibilities?
Yeah.
Ooh, he's trying to tell everybody, hey, I faked the moon landing, but I can't talk about
it. I can't tell you that because they'll kill everybody
Instead,
I know.
Instead, I'll make a special sweater for a youngster.
It's definitely worth a view. Yeah. 237's, it can drag on, but it had some interesting shit in there to where I was like, okay, I'll give it Shiny in a second.
But isn't it just that he was being relevant to the time? And by making Apollo 11 that hasn't happened yet, though. It's like if you know, if you're making a movie and you know it's going to come out in the next year, you don't use five-year-old flip phones, right? You get whatever the latest is so it'll hold up as a visual prop. So maybe that's all it was.
It's
like, hey, the movie's coming out next year. Let's just go with Apollo 11.
Pareidolia.
Yeah, or the kid is, you know, he's at that point in his elementary school, he's probably being taught about space and about the moon landing and Neil Armstrong. And
well,
so
I'm old enough.
He might be super into it.
I'm old enough to tell you, when the Apollo missions would take place,
yes,
every school classroom would stop whatever was happening.
Right.
And you would bring a TV in on a cart. And sometimes, like when I was in grade school, I was from a small, poor town in Ohio. We would put the TV in the gymnasium, and we would all gather around, the whole school.
You know,
and watch
yeah.
the Apollo
It was a huge thing. That's
thing.
Why when the Apollo blew up, which may or may not have happened, but...
The Challenger.
The Challenger. When the Challenger blew up, and there's a theory that they're all alive, but that's another episode. That was such a big deal. A big deal. And I remember kids in the class not being able to comprehend that blowing up and making jokes about it. And our science teacher teed off on us. He's like, you guys will never do anything close to what they did. And I was like, God damn.
But now we know that the moon landing happens. Like, we've seen it live, right?
I don't know, dog. We have theories on this show.
But is the theory that we still fake it?
Here's the theory. My opinion is either we've never gotten through the Van Allen belt and it's all black ops fucking money grabs, or we're on every single planet.
There's no in between.
I don't think so. I don't think so. That's just my opinion, man. Dude, I am so into space. I don't know if you follow these whole feeds with these satellites,
man.
Have you seen they catch weird-ass shit flying by? And now there's this new thing that this photo just came out about the sun, and they had a solar flare, and you could see, like, some weird, like, triangular thing in the corner, and then they put it out with it blocked out, but somebody was able to catch it, and it's this weird, like...
Hanging Munchkin.
No, it's not the Hanging Munchkin. It's not the Hanging Munchkin, dude.
I thought that's where you're going.
No, we're going there, though. We are going there.
Definitely.
Do you want to get into the Wizard of Oz, or you want to talk about...
Sure, let's talk about it.
Okay, so this is another
one. Well, that's a good one, though.
We'll get into that in 2 seconds. The Wizard of Oz, there's so much darkness that people talk about with the Wizard of Oz. And one of the biggest things is that there is a munchkin that is in this scene here.
To Oz? To Oz.
It's a silhouette and supposed to be him hanging.
Now, if you watch this video, there's something going on way in the back.
That's a wren. It looks like a wren, a giant bird, land bird.
Yeah. Right?
Whoa,
right.
It's a pelican.
Well, it's a wren, but you could say it's a pelican.
Whoa, I never seen the wings open. That's awesome.
You think it's a pelican?
Oh, did you see those wings open?
No, I think it's a wren.
A wren.
Really?
Yeah.
So you don't think it's a hanging munchkin?
Well, no, not this version.
Yes, I've heard about there's two versions.
Yeah, there's wild animals.
Yeah, there's two different versions.
Okay, so where's the other version?
I don't know. We'll find
it. Oh, there it is, right there on your YouTube.
Where?
The second one.
This one?
No, one above it.
There you go.
All right, let's see this one. Oh, I know what's going to happen. We're going to get an advertisement on this. Okay, Suicide Theory of One of the Munchkins. Here we go. The Wizard of Oz, Suicide Munchkin. It says Wizard of Oz, 1939.
Creepy.
Is that movie this old? 1939?
Oh, yeah, it's old.
That's like I was in seventh grade.
This movie always scared me, by the way.
Really?
Oh, yeah, the witch. Ooh, and those monkeys.
Creepy music.
To this day.
Ugh. So weird. Another version came out later, which I'll show you in a few months. Oh!
It's definitely hanging and swinging.
See him swinging
version.
Now?
Oh, yeah, for sure. Thoughts, Aaron?
He's blown. Speechless.
I mean,
we got him.
The quality's so poor on that. I don't.
Aaron, that was just rude.
Yeah, there's other things.
At this point, you're just fighting us.
I know the next one we're going to talk about is one of your favorite films, Aaron.
I
definitely know.
I did some research on this one.
Okay.
Okay, and this clip, The Truth About the Suicidal Munchkin, points it out that someone went in when they bought a VHS tape, like in the, I think it was in the 80s, mm-hmm. and they painted that in. And for its day, it's really fucking awesome trickery. But if you watch closely, you can even see when the scarecrow's head goes in front, it's a little
wompy,
a little poor, and the wren's wing goes behind it. So it's like putting a Band-Aid in Photoshop over it.
What?
Yeah.
Can we always have this creepy backwards music while we talk? Can we just like always have that?
That should be the show, just creepy ass fucking... Oh.
So that's the version without it. That's the original. And then some jolly jokester put in the suicidal munchkin to spur this kind of conversation.
Now, is it the director
Hold
of
on.
This?
You're saying someone just took a VHS tape, put this in it?
Yeah, basically. Someone like in an effects house or, you know, it's like Photoshop, right? And you go frame by frame. It's how we do effects.
I don't know.
Oh, no. I'm telling you. I watched this one yesterday preparing for the program.
I always thought the suicidal munchkin was earlier when it was just the scarecrows in the background. And that was I always thought that was where that was allegedly.
Now, is it the director of the film or actually Frank Baum, whose son committed suicide by hanging? Because that's where the weirdness comes into.
I don't know that.
That's where the whole myth falls out of.
Hmm. Yeah.
I don't know that one.
So let's get on to the next one because I know Aaron's going to like this one. Raiders of the Lost Ark. There's a scene in it when you see Indy and he's in like a temple. Mm-hmm. And this was made by George Lucas. And he put a little Easter egg in there because not all the things that directors put into films are like, you know, evil and creepy and weird. Some of them are just, you know, tongue in cheek. And this is one of them where in the hieroglyphics you can see on the little pillar that it's 3CPO and R2-D2.
That's so cool. I think it's so fun.
And I know there's some super Star Wars nerds that probably have that exact hieroglyphic tattooed on them somewhere.
Yeah. Wow.
If you guys have it, please send it to us.
I'll pay for some donuts, dream donuts.
You get your dream donuts as your next gig if you send us your tattoo of R2-D2 and CP3L, who I believe was the first gay superhero, by the way. Thoughts.
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 I'm into it.
Okay.
Yeah, Disney.
I mean,
always...
he was a gay robot, right?
Yes.
I mean, are we right?
Gay bot. The official term.
Gay bot, I mean, go.
He's a droid.
He's a droid. He's the first droid with a
gay droid.
Adjustable asshole. Was that rude? I'm sorry about that.
So
next
we're moving forward in 1999. A film called The Matrix came out.
Oh, yeah.
Now, this has a little bit of a tie-in to a future episode we're going to do. But when Neo gets arrested by the agents and they have him in the room where they're getting, what are they? What's that called?
Interrogation
room.
There you go, Aaron. Yeah. So real quick, you would miss it, but someone's actually like photographed it, turned it around so you can see it. They have all his papers and his documents, and it's his passport. And on his passport, it says that the expiration date, and this movie came out in 99,
yeah,
is September 11th, 2001.
That's Paradopolis. Paradipitous.
What's that?
Paradelia.
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 We're making shit.
That's Paradelia right
stuff
there. Well, no, it might be true. It might have been it might have influenced the filmmakers.
Oh, so no. You're talking precognitive.
Precognitive, yes.
Precognitive art.
I think that's what this is.
Let's explain what that is to our listeners and our viewers. Basically, the theory is that an event is so big,
it's like a pebble dropping into the pond of time.
And it causes a ripple effect that both affects the future and the past.
And the Wachowski brothers, or sisters now, as they're known.
Siblings.
Yeah.
Siblings.
Wachowski siblings.
I knew them back in the day. I knew them when they were filming this. They were two of the nicest people I've ever met, and they would always give me updates on it. And they're like, dude, you love Kung Fu? I'm like, yeah, I love
this
Kung Fu.
This is going to be huge.
He's like, dude, we're getting back to Kung Fu. I'm like, fuck yeah. So they were staying at my hotel I was valeting at the time. And they would give me breakdowns. And I didn't understand how big the movie was going to be, and I don't think anyone did. And it just, boom, blew up out of nowhere.
Huge.
So the whole idea is that 9/11 was such a big event that it had a ripple effect both in the future and the past. And that would explain if you just want to sit down and take a look at it, because some people want to go, oh, this video game, it has 9/11 in it. That means that they knew about it. Or maybe they were just affected by the ripple.
Yeah, these are artists. We're all artists here. Aaron's an audio artist. We're closer to...
He's a stuffed crust pizza artist.
We have our ear onto like the rail
a consumer.
Of like the deeper sides of things.
You're tapped
you know?
In.
Yeah. And so who knows? Maybe you just picked up a signal and you decided that's what you're going to do. But it's weird one way or the other. I mean.
I believe it was the philosopher Carl Jung. I hope I'm saying that right.
Carl Jung.
Yeah. Carl Jung.
Who said that the artist must sacrifice his or her normal life to be able to tap into something bigger and represent mankind as a whole.
Interesting.
And, yeah. So, and whether you set out to do that consciously or you allow that to happen, I think that's what happens in great art. You're tapping in. And then right before the show, I was telling you my belief of time is not that there is no time.
Right.
We invented time to measure the day to day. The mathematics of time helps us keep track of shit.
Right.
But really, things may be going forward, backwards, sideways, inside itself, or like a black hole of time.
Yes.
Right? So I'm not saying they predicted 9/11 by putting Neo's passport to expire on September 11th. But somehow that date ended up. Could be coincidental.
Could be
that like, hey, that's going to be a big thing.
Yeah, it's. I believe in, dude, this podcast opened my mind to so much. Who knows time? Is it linear? Is it like a book where just, you know, the years are stacked and you can go from one page to another if you dig through? I mean, it's such an interesting thing.
Well, look at a tribe. I like hip-hop music, right?
Yeah, I think we all do.
Tribe Called Quest comes out with an album long before Trump is president. One of the best tracks is about Donald Trump. They didn't predict that he was going to. He was in the zeitgeist, and as artists, they were tapped into it. Or Jay-Z's new album has a song called The Story of O.J. Long before he got released, and he's writing this song, probably 7-8 months ago recording it. But it's so on point now for like race relations. And there's a guy on the internet that tried to dissect that music video. He's like, look, He's in front of a postcard of Florida, holding up orange juice, trying to say to OJ, "Hey, you're nothing but orange juice." And I was like, "Well, maybe his initials are OJ."
Yeah,
and
yeah.
People called him the Juice.
There again, we're getting back to people who like to find stuff and what they are. Or the theory is that maybe Donald Trump has a time machine. Have you heard this theory?
No.
Yeah. Have you heard this theory? That Donald Trump's father worked with Tesla, and one of the things Tesla had was the plans to a time machine. And there's this whole Reddit theory.
Wow.
That dude, that Donald Trump, that's why Donald Trump can predict everything, is because he has a time machine.
It only goes like 7 minutes into the future, though.
That would be hilarious.
It's like the prototype.
Oh, that would be hilarious.
Please, meme makers, make the Sam Tripoli, "Did you know Donald Trump has a time machine" meme. I got to see that one.
I had a, back in the day, used to actually have to go to a pot dealer's house.
Oh, yeah.
And sit there and listen to these bullshit theories. Yeah. Whereas now it's like buying a Slurpee, or if you had Speedweed.
Yeah.
One of our sponsors.
Speedweed.com for all your weed needs in Los Angeles.
And they bring the weed to you.
Yeah.
It's a wonderful
These
service.
Kids have it made. It's unbelievable. Like, we used to have to go to a bad section of town, meet a guy named Paco on the corner of Rape and Murder.
Yeah,
and then
sure.
We'd get a bag, and then we'd have to pick through it for fucking seeds and branches.
Stems, yes.
Because we didn't want to explode in our fucking faces.
Well, this guy, this dealer I had,
he can get that weed delivered to you, and then hear the conversation on Tinfoil Hat.
Yes,
for free.
Okay,
and it's better weed.
It's better weed and better conversation.
Absolutely.
Yeah, these kids have it made. They get so sensitive over words and jokes. If they literally let it go, they'd have it perfect. You can hump anything you want now, and nobody judges you. You can fucking, do you guys hear the new theory that's out there?
Oh,
and I've been talking about this on stage, that Adam and Eve didn't get kicked out of the fucking Garden of Eden because they ate an apple. They left because the devil knocked up Eve, which means that Adam and Eve could have been in the cuckolding. Anybody thought of this? It's a new joke.
I had no idea where you're going with that. But no, hey, my old weed dealer, rest in peace. He talked to me one
died?
Time. Yeah, he died. He died. He, good guy, but he had this whole
weed
thing.
Dealers are good dudes.
He was a great dude. Great dude. Big heart.
Tough business.
But he talked about these lizard people under the White House. And
dude,
he went to a convention. And
Pindar, homeboy.
I said, maybe you shouldn't tell anybody other than me about that.
Well, dude, there's a lot of correlations between, if you know, that lizard people are out there, the involvement of lizard people, the talking of hell. Hell was created as a way to, you ever hear of hollow earth theory?
Oh, sure.
Have you heard of that the entrance to the... the Earth is through
the White House.
Antarctica, and there's certain parts you can't go into. And there's Admiral Byrd, and he's this famous journal that his kids found that he wrote about how he got in a fight with Nazis and UFOs. But think about this: what is hell, man? What is hell? Hell, whatever religion you talk about, this damnation place, which is in the center of Earth, which is what habited by demons. Let's just say lizard people. What if lizard people look like demons?
Yeah.
It's a weird thing that's going on. There's this Pindar and this this whole theory that the royal family are lizard people, and that's why forever they kept their bloodline pure.
All right.
We don't know anything, but there's such It's like, dude, there's so much interesting shit going on in the world, man, that there's so much going on. Like, this is literally like a 1980s bukkake of fucking evildoers from every movie. Like, we got space aliens everywhere. We got Russians.
Well, there's got to be aliens. I mean, like in Area 51, they've got to have bodies.
Okay, now the new theory is, and this whole, some guy broke down like on a Google map, is like, and my friend... So I go home and we got to wrap it up here. What are you doing? So I go home and I have a dinner with friends of mine, and he starts talking to me about how his whole job is to go around and meet people and help them with their insurance or their life insurance and stuff like that. And he meets this famous guy that used to go around and he delivers software to different places. And one time, he gets called to this base. And he has to go to this base. And he drives up, and it's near Area 51. And he goes, Area 51 is just a shift focus. They tell you about that, so looks over here.
Distraction.
The real thing
Area
is,
50.
It's this Seven. Mountain. This mountain that's near there that you can literally go into the mountain. So he tells me this story where they drive up, and it's so secretive that they had to turn the car around, and they back it up. And they're not allowed to look sideways. They just have to back it up, and they have to listen to the guys on the car tell them this shit, right? So then, like, 2 weeks later, I see a fucking thing. They put out, someone had taken Google Maps, and they found this entrance into the side of a mountain. And I'll send you the link. I can't find it right now because we have to wrap it up. But it's like, there looks like a straight up entrance into a mountain.
With a hanging munchkin.
Where all the alien crazy shit goes on. Like, there's just interesting thing. Like the jump between, the missing link between monkeys to man.
Oh, yeah.
What is that?
Sasquatch.
Sasquatch.
Yeti.
Love it.
The entire time you're talking right now, yeah. I was playing something called infrasound, and that's a low unaudible frequency, anything under 20 hertz. And it was at 19 hertz. And it's designed, they put this into sound in to make it, you have like a sense of nausea and fear and anxiety.
Oh, my stomach just started hurting.
So the entire time, and it's still going on right now.
Yeah.
So people with headphones that are listening to this. Yeah, no, it's unaudible. Yeah.
It's unaudible, Aaron.
You're playing it right now.
Yeah.
And so they've done these, scientists have figured out that tigers let out a 19 hertz roar right before they attack a prey as a way to like startle,
disable them or something.
Yeah, out of straight fear.
Oh,
and so,
I like that. Yeah.
I mean, it's there.
Now, why did you do that to us?
It's still going on right now.
Why are you doing this to us, Ryan?
Welcome to Mindfuck.
Holy cow, I need
it's a Mindfuck. Well, guys. Tell us one more time where they can find your movie, Jordan.
IamBattleComic.com. You could put the www in it, but you don't need to. IamBattleComic. Go to iTunes.
I told my friend that a year ago. He didn't know that. For all his life, he's been putting www. I'm like, you know, you don't have to do that. He goes, I go, yeah. IamBattleComic.com. Check it out. Support the movie because he supports the troops. And we're going to get final thoughts. Even though Aaron talked a lot. This one really, really had a compadre in skepticism today. Yeah. Real quick.
The guys who went to film school.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Homeschool. What?
Yeah, I don't believe any of this.
I mean, Aaron.
Sorry.
Really, Aaron?
Sorry, guys.
Really? Really? Well, this has been the podcast. Thank you for coming on, Jordan.
Thanks,
I appreciate what you've done, the project you worked, and you know, helping out the troops. And I appreciate you coming on and hearing about lizard people and time travel and all that stuff.
Oh, it's great. And, you know, in preparation, I did show my daughters Dark Side of Oz.
And how'd they take that?
It blew their mind at how it sunk up and that that's just random, right? I mean...
That's the whole thing, dude.
Check us out, man. Go ahead, tinfoilhatpod@gmail.com. Send us emails, anyone you guys want to hear. And definitely check out the new Instagram, tinfoilhatpod.
We're going to be doing a couple swap casts coming out with some great podcasts and some good friends. We're going to try to get Owen Benjamin in this Thursday, and they'll do a swap cast with Brett Ernst and Pete Giovanni next week. From their show, You're on the List, we're going to do top 10 conspiracy theories. Guys, check us out on all our social media. Buy our shirts, dude. I can't believe we didn't push that.
All comedy t-shirts.
Show them your shirt. Go to allcomedytshirts.com, tinfoil hat, buy the shirts. And we got some good shirts coming out, so get your shirts now. We appreciate everything, guys, and we will see you sooner than later. Thank you. Go if you want to see the video version of this, go to youtube.com/SamTripoli, and it's available on YouTube, and we will see you guys sooner than later. Thanks for tuning in. Bye, everybody.
This is only the beginning.